Ahoy mateys, and welcome to drop number 9 of the Oceans Podcast, the show that shares the experiences, wisdom, and knowledge from a variety of different mermaids and mermen. My name's Josh Tebbett, and I'll be your captain navigating us through the show. For everyone that's spent time on the water, we know how important it is to protect ourselves from the sun. But do we stop and think what most sunscreens are made from? Or what effect sunscreen has on our oceans? Today we catch up with Sunbutter co-founders Tom Heine and Sasha Guggenheimer to talk everything sunscreen. For the past 5 years, Tom and Sash have been on an epic journey creating their own brand of reef-safe sunscreen, Sunbutter. We discuss the early days of making small batch sunscreens, the ups and downs of trying to get a small business off the ground, as well as valuable information about the nasty stuff found in normal sunscreen. So, without further ado, Tom and Sash, welcome to the Oceans Podcast.
Hey, mate. Thank you, Josh.
Thanks for having us.
My absolute pleasure. How are you both?
Yeah, really good. Thanks, mate. Really very good.
Super well.
Fantastic. You guys are in Australia at the moment, which is fantastic. You guys seem to be jet setting all over the place, whether it be the Seychelles or PNG or who knows where, but it's good to catch you guys when you're both in Australia and you guys are getting a bit of downtime. So you guys have just been for a bit of a surf on the northeast coast there in New South Wales?
Yeah, we just snuck up to Byron Bay for my birthday weekend.
Happy birthday.
Thanks, mate. Yeah, it was a real fun one. Went for some warm weather, got a lot of rain, and now we're back on the Mornington Peninsula. So, yeah, nice bit of downtime for us now.
Awesome. Great to hear. Let's just sort of take it back a little bit as we do and come to the beginning. So, you're both obviously super passionate about the ocean. It is your playground. So, let's just start with Sash. And what sort of drew you to the ocean? Did your family have a bit of ocean background, or was it just sort of living near the coast? What was the go there?
Well, my dad's a criminal barrister and my mum's a Swiss mountain girl. There wasn't a huge ocean connection there, except that we all loved it and enjoyed beach days. I really felt always like the ocean was a constant in my life and I was so drawn to it. It's kind of something I feel I was born with. There's not a moment where I can't remember being fascinated by it and just wanting to spend time in it.
That's awesome. I guess it's one of those places that once you get hooked and addicted, it's like, got to go back sort of thing. So what about you, Tom? What's your sort of early experiences with the ocean?
Yeah, I guess not too dissimilar to Sash. You know, I grew up in the middle of England, about as far from the sea in England as you can get. But I just had way too many David Attenborough documentaries and Gerald Darrell books and things like that going on. So early childhood family holidays down to the beach, I was always snorkeling in the freezing water or diving through rock pools and tide pools and looking for crabs and sea urchins and anemones. And yeah, I guess as I got older and could start traveling my own, I just wanted to go somewhere warm and see what was lying under the surface, and have sort of been doing that for the last 12 years or so.
And you guys sort of recently have been on expedition yachts, well, not yachts, expedition motorboats sort of motoring around. Can you tell us some of the places you've been to in the last 2 years?
Yeah, it's been phenomenal, hey. So we've been doing some work in expedition cruise industry on small sort of 60 or 80 passenger cruise ships, and we pretty much get sent to all the tropical places. So the Indo-Pacific, with, you know, Seychelles, Madagascar, Mauritius, Maldives, that area, and then a lot of PNG work, and probably our favourite stuff has been exploring Melanesia, so like Solomon's, Vanuatu, and then heading further east over towards French Polynesia, the Marquesas, and
Easter Island
is pretty much the furthest east we've got. So that's been awesome for us to play in the ocean. But we've also been so lucky and been sent to some colder regions recently. I just came back from the Subantarctic Islands off New Zealand and heading up to the far east of Russia in June, I think it is. So, yes, such a treat to see those colder places as well.
Wow, that'll be an eye-opener, man. Like, because I think I had no idea that there was such a prolific wildlife expanse in the north of Russia, and I guess it's the Arctic Circle, and there's going to be quite a lot of cetacean species there, and being cold water, there's going to be a lot of food. What sort of things are you hoping to see and experience?
Oh, mate, just frothing my socks off at the idea of it. It's meant to be so wild and untamed. We're actually going to start at the northern tip of Japan and then head up through some island groups. Should get brown bears, should be plenty of walrus around, and so many cool seabirds like tufted and horned puffins, which, I mean, puffins are the coolest seabird anyway. They're so darn cute. But if you give them horns or little tufts by their eyes, they get even better. Yeah, I'm just going to keep my eyes peeled out to see, because there could be anything knocking around. We could get orca, could get humpbacks. and plenty of dolphin species as well, like you say, mate. So hopefully a bit of time out on deck and gazing out to sea, and we'll see what comes our way.
Love it. Absolutely love it. And what about you, Sash? What's been going on the last few years for you?
Yeah, I guess I've been really lucky to be traveling with Tom, that we get the opportunity to do a lot of this ship work together. But more recently, because we started our ReefSafe sunscreen business, Sunbutter, and it's doing really well. It's kind of like a baby. It can't be left unattended anymore. So usually one of us gets a contract and the other one stays behind. And Tom's been doing this year more of the contracts, and I've been looking after our little rescue dog Toco and looking after our Sunbutter business, which has been really fun, and also kind of getting my roots back in the ground and doing more community work back home.
That's really beautiful. It's almost, I just, when Tom mentioned seabirds before, I was like, Sunbutter is almost like a nest egg, and you guys are sort of, one of you flies off and goes for a feed out in the ocean, brings back some food whilst the other one watches the nest.
Albatross, absolutely. One of us on the nest, one of us flying out to see Sunbutter.
Yeah, so true. And I think we love letting the other one go and come back and tell us all these amazing stories, because it just keeps us inspired. It's really nice that we can separate and come back together and, yeah, keep the fuel going and the fire going for the cause.
Yeah, that's fantastic. It's so, yeah, I look at you guys and I think, wow, what a like phenomenal couple. You've got this passion for the ocean. You love it. You know, both of you can do your exploring and that sort of stuff, and I think it's just really incredible to see.
Hey guys, it's Sash.
And Tom. From Sunbutter Sun Care. If you want to reach out to us, you can find us at Sunbutter Sun Care on Instagram and Facebook, or just head to www.sunbutter.com.au and you can find our contact details there or shop online.
So now that we've mentioned the SB word, the old Sunbutter word, I'd like to dive into that a little bit more. Can you guys give me an idea of where this brainchild came from to start?
Yeah, I guess it was like one of my standard DIY experiments. I used to get into a lot of trouble experimenting with this sort of stuff at home when I would make like weird perfumes and then pour it in the bath and, you know, just chop up mum's favorite roses and try and do something with that. And finally, it's kind of paid off. So my family's forgiving me now for wrecking all their blenders and everything. I was working on the Ningaloo Reef, which is where I met Tom and where I met you. It's the most amazing reef system I've ever experienced. Out on the whale shark boats, and as you know, it's 8 hours plus a day in the sunshine, and you have to wear sun protection. There's parts of your body you just physically can't cover up when you're swimming. So sunscreen's really important, and this was like back in 2015, and we're starting to learn about the effects of chemical sunscreens on coral reefs. And I thought, oh, don't want to use those chemicals anymore. So let's just try and make something myself. So I actually got on the internet and found a few recipes and then, you know, fiddled away. And I do have a bit of a background in chemistry, so that all helped. And also mum's with heritage of making potions and tinctures and everything growing up. I just kept refining the recipe until I was happy, and then I gave a batch away of this first ever sun butter for Christmas to about 15 friends and family, and every single one came back and said, oh, Sash, can you make me another pot? And I was like, okay, yeah, no worries. So that continued a little bit, and one day I dropped about $400 on ingredients, and Tom's like, oh, Sash, that's enough. No more. You're going to have to do something about this. People are going to have to start paying for it if you want to keep making it. So that's kind of how it started.
I like to think I was marginally more supportive, but what I failed to tell is after the rave reviews from the Christmas present, she and I was away working on a ship, she decided it'd be really nice to share the recipe on social media with everybody. And thankfully her brother like rushed into the living room and was like, what are you doing? You and Tom, you know, you're just too big a dreamers. Get that down and try and turn it into a business. Otherwise, you'll be working on whale shark boats for eternity or drifting for eternity.
My brother's a commercial lawyer now, by the way.
Yeah,
I like it. Yeah, bit of sensibility in the heat of the moment. It was just like, hang on, let's bring it back.
I think there's like a really key step in there as well. We were hand making it and getting great feedback and loving it. But like as Sash mentioned, sunscreen is classed as medicine, so you cannot put an SPF rating on it unless it's made in an approved facility. So we paid a fortune to get our product tested to make sure it worked, because, you know, we're starting to sell quite a high volume, and we're explaining to people why it didn't have an SPF rating. And yeah, the handmade formula came back with a 25 plus, so we're happy with that. But eventually sort of demand outweighed the supply we could do. So we started working with a pharmaceutical partner to contract manufacture it for us and get it through all those regulative hurdles and hoops and cross all our T's and dot the I's and things like that. And yeah, and so they've now been making our formula for us and getting it through all that that legislation and all the regulations and getting us that really important SPF factor.
Was that the biggest challenge that you've faced with Sun Butter so far?
Oh, man.
No.
One of them. Okay. Well, let's dive right into that. What have been the biggest hurdles to get over with the whole Sun Butter enterprise?
It was, I can't even believe it, but it was the packaging. It's like, you know, you're dealing with a medicine and we've got to have it all SPF tested and all of that. And that's like, you know, that's really, that's advanced testing, and you'd think that that'd be the biggest hurdle. But because we wanted to package plastic free and no one was doing it in Australia at the time, we just got laughed at. We really like tried to work with many manufacturers, and it boiled down to two. And thankfully, it was the group that we really wanted to work with that have a solar power factory and share very similar ethics to us. They're the ones who just heard us out and let us, you know, keep the conversation open with us. And it took 18 months for us to get all our ducks in a row and be able to package in tin, not in plastic.
Yeah, wow. That's, I guess, good sort of insight to have into the whole trying to find a decent supply for packaging, but also, I guess, a little bit sad in the fact that it is so hard to find, you know, plastic-free packaging within Australia.
Yeah, and it was really crazy, mate, as well. You know, like we're emailing all these companies, and it's fair, we're like a tiny startup and we're just scraping by minimum orders. But all these companies we're approaching to work with, and they're sort of like, oh, no, it's never been done before, we're not interested in doing it. And you're like, just imagine if this is the start of like the next big cosmetic revolution, that everyone starts moving away from plastic packaging or finds alternatives. Like, wouldn't you, this big generic pharmaceutical company, want to be at the spearhead at the front of that? And no one had any interest. And then they stopped replying to our emails and not answering our phone calls. And yeah, we sort of found ourselves in a bit of wilderness. But thankfully, we found a friend. And yeah, I've been working really well with them ever since.
To be able to actually have the will to keep going because you have a goal in mind and that you're going to achieve. That's awesome, guys.
Yeah, it really helps as well being in it together, you know, like being a couple or just being a business partnership, because we definitely had days where one of us was ready to throw in the towel and the other had just achieved like a minor victory that boosted both of us. And the next week, the other one wants to quit and, you know, the other one's found a little bit of success somewhere. And so that was so, so vital to help keep us both going when, you know, if it had been one of us, I think we may not have seen it through to fruition. But just having sort of that positivity and that support from the other one at all times was really helpful, hey?
So it's been fun kind of learning on the fly, and it's so cool because we don't have business backgrounds. You know, I'm a marine biologist. Tom's been working in conservation, and it's like just been learning on the go, and that's so much fun.
At the end of the day, you know, you don't have experience until you have experience, and learning on the go, I think, is the best way to learn. You know, you can read anything in a textbook or from an online journal or whatever it might be, but unless you experience and you actually do it, then you really don't know what it's about.
Yeah, mate, absolutely. So, so true. And yeah, we go with the best intentions and make our decisions that are going to benefit the planet the most, and then hope that our business can line up with those, really.
And in terms of inspiration and companies or people to look towards, are there any specific, you know, entities that you look at and go, right, that's the same thing that we align with?
Yeah, mate, definitely. We were at a little business function in the city recently with Keep Cup and 1% for the Planet and Patagonia. And I mean, we're 1% for the Planet members, and Patagonia obviously they're pretty at the pinnacle for ethical and environmental businesses. But there's a comment, I'm not going to remember it verbatim, but at the head of Patagonia Australia was just saying, someone of the business people there was saying, hey, why did you never get shareholders, or why did you ever float on the stock market? Because, you know, you could raise so much more money. And they just explained that, you know, they don't want to answer to anybody. If they need to turn around and give $10,000 to an environmental cause, that's what they're going to do. And they're not going to turn around to their shareholders or their board of directors and ask for permission. They're just going to say, no, we want to stop Adani or protect the Great Australian Bight or save Ningaloo or stop AGL development in Western Port Bay or, you know, whatever it may be. And we have money at our disposal to help that. We're going to do that. And I think today, actually, they've just announced that they're going to contribute funds to restore Lake Pedder in Tasmania, which is awesome. That's such a good cause. And we kind of, you know, we're tiny, mate. We're a small business with great intentions and big aspirations. And we look at those guys and you're like, hey, that's where we want to be. We don't really want people giving us money that we have to answer to when we can just grow organically and slowly but surely. And, you know, we're up to like $800 or so we're donating towards wildlife charities for the bushfires. And we give 10% of profits away to four charitable partners. So, yeah, looking up to Patagonia, they're definitely a pretty good brand to look towards.
That's awesome. And I guess from small things or from little things, big things grow. And you guys have obviously proven that. So I think we'll definitely dive into the whole sun butter thing a little bit later on, but kind of want to touch on some of the experiences that you've had specifically. So starting with Sash, you able to give us, you know, one or two experiences you've had either in the water or around the water that you've just gone, this is it, like this is ultimate, I'm having the best time of my life?
Oh my goodness, so many. I've been so blessed in the ocean. I've had some incredible encounters, especially with marine mammals. But the one, when you ask me that question, the one that just springs up first is definitely the time I got to swim with orca on the Ningaloo Reef. And there's no swim with orca tours on Ningaloo Reef. We were just really absolutely fortunate. It was this amazing day. We're gearing up on the whale shark boats and we hear that there's orca out the back. So all the boats charge out the passages to go and find them. And we get to watch them for a little bit, and then it's, you know, whale shark time. So we go for a swim with the whale sharks. And it was an amazing day, so, so flat and glassy. The water was like silk. There wasn't even a memory of a wind that blew on the water surface. It was just flat and glassy. And the viz was about 30 to 40 meters, Gatorade blue, and we're swimming with these giant whale sharks. It was like a 10-meter whale shark. It was epic, epic in itself. And I remember swimming back to the boat with my crew, and Bill McDonald from King's, where I worked, being like, Sash, there's orca coming. It's, if you wanna, you gotta go now. And I was like, oh my goodness, this is my chance. He's like, swim towards the back of the reef. So there I am, like powering. I told my old grey nomad group, so there were a lot of oldies there, if they wanted to come, and there was a few of them that followed me. And I was just powering to the back of the reef, and there, just as I'm seeing the reef edge in my view, there's Hook and Elle, so the matriarch Hook of her pod, and Elle, her calf, was about 3 years old. And they come from the blue and the back of the reef, and they come past me, and Hook just dives through this whole ball of gold band fusiliers, and they scatter like confetti and glitter, just shimmering all through wherever I can see. And then she kind of, it's like she gives permission to Elle to come a little bit closer and say hello. So she dove down deep, and then Elle was like, okay, cool, Mum, I'll come say hi. And she just cruised past me about, you know, 5 meters past me, and I stuck my hand in the air. That's what we do when we spot something, to tell the boat we've seen it. And I was just throwing shuckers and squealing through my snorkel like,
yes, yes. Oh.
Exact same thing back to me. She went and started head bobbing her head and getting really excited, and then kind of pulsed back to Mum and grabbed on like stuff next to her pectoral fin, and then they just cruised off into the distance. And it was one of the most epic things that's ever happened to me. And not only that, One of the fellas that was spotting from the plane was able to take a few shots of us in the water. And when you see the photos, I'm like this tiny little green jelly bean, and you can see all the reef underneath me, and then these two beautiful orca coming right past in the frame. It was just spectacular.
Oh my God. I'm almost in tears, to be honest. Like, I'm just feeling completely relaxed listening to that story, thinking, oh, just wouldn't it just be amazing to be in those flippers of yours in that situation? Oh, God, thank you so much for sharing.
Yeah, oh, you're welcome. It was, I was truly humbled. It was one of the best things that's ever happened to me.
That's just beautiful. Oh, I've almost got goosebumps. A bit speechless, to be honest. Wow, that's incredible. Well, I don't think that we can try to top it, but I mean, Tom, you're up against a big component here, or a big opponent here. I don't think you can top that one, mate. But what about you? Some of the experiences that you've had, would you like to share?
Oh, mate, you should have asked me first.
I know. I'm so sorry.
That's all right.
We'll switch it out. I can just edit it so I cut Sash's right out and put it in.
I'm going to give a couple if I may. I've got so much ground to catch up on, Sash, that I might as well do a list. But I was in Svalbard a couple of years ago, which is an archipelago of islands off the northern tip of Norway. Yeah, we were sort of working on an expedition trip there, and we had phenomenal polar bear sightings, which was absolutely phenomenal. And I guess probably the standout there was one evening we had just sort of been cruising past a walrus colony, and, you know, they're spectacular, these giant things with, you know, 3 or 4 foot long tusks or teeth just coming out of their jaws, and amazing themselves. And we're just cruising on a beach where we'd seen a bit of a carcass on earlier, and you know, the light was perfect. You know, 24 hour daylight, but the sun was going to get, so it was pretty dusky, and there was just the most magical, massive, healthy looking bear stood by a carcass, and she was so big and so relaxed that we just had, you know, maybe 6 or 8 zodiacs in the water, you know, 20 odd meters offshore, just watching her, and just to sort of be in the presence of that sort of apex predator, just ignoring us, doing her thing, pretty happy to find a carcass. You know, they have such a tough time during the summer months, and we were there in July, and to see that she's got a huge food source, and that is definitely going to see her through to winter. That was pretty spectacular. And I guess probably stand out for being in the water was, I was off an atoll called Cosmolito in the Indian Ocean. It's in the Seychelles, and it's right next to a place called Aldabra, which is pretty much the jewel of the Indian Ocean. It's the world's largest raised coral atoll, and it's completely closed off to tourism unless you're on one of these ships. You just cannot get there. It's, you know, 1,000 miles off the coast of Africa. It's 1,000 miles off the coast of Madagascar. There's no airports anywhere near it. You've got to sail there. It's phenomenal. Everything on land pretty much is endemic. It's got giant tortoises. And so people go there and they skip some of the other islands, but Cosmolito is spectacular. And Sash and I work on one of these ships, and we just finished the day's activities, and we're sort of taking down the snorkel area that we'd sort of pop some buoys in the water so the customers knew where they should snorkel. And yeah, Sash had actually lost her snorkel, so I was being a really nice guy and free diving around trying to find it, and gradually working my way deeper and deeper on the edge of this drop off. Couldn't find it, so I just sort of swam through the deep blue back towards one of the zodiacs, and out of nowhere this massive school of tuna, like thousands and thousands of fish, just turned up, just rose out of the deep. And I was sort of, they weren't quite a tornado, you know, they were a gentle vortex, but just swirling around. And these are huge fish, and to see one is a privilege, because, you know, we just see tins of tuna, but to see thousands of these guys, and the Western Indian Ocean tuna fishery is one of the biggest on the planet, and just to be sort of in the middle of one of these giant schools was spectacular. And I hollered at Sash, who was on the Zodiac, she jumped in, and we sort of swam through it together, and, you know, came up just huge grins on our faces, and then signaled to our mate that he should come pick us up. And whilst we're swimming a little bit further out to go and see him, a school of 200-300 hammerheads just did exactly the same thing, just popped up out of the deep blue water. Man, I nearly lost my mind. Hey, you see it on documentaries, but there they were just cruising past, and they're probably sort of 15 meters down, and we were duck diving down in the middle of them. And yeah, it was super poignant. We just had a really, really dear friend pass away like the day before we'd found out. So we were pretty sad about that. And then just for the ocean to give you such an experience, you know, it felt like it lasted only seconds, but we probably had, you know, 10 minutes with the hammerheads. And the coolest thing actually about it is, you know, the hundreds of them disappeared back into the blue from whence they came, but one female stuck around, you know, 3.5-4 meters in length, and just circled us for another few minutes. And followed us towards the boat, and we felt no aggression. And, you know, it might sound a little bit corny or whatever, but having just lost this beautiful mermaid, to have a beautiful female shark follow us around, you're sort of like, yeah, it was a magic experience, and it was pretty darn special, hey.
One of the things that you said, it was an incredible experience what the ocean gave you. It's like that sometimes when you're in the water and having these incredible experiences, you do feel very blessed, very grateful that it's happening, and it almost feels like a gift, like you're being given something that is incredible, special, and it sort of, I don't know, you sort of question like, oh, do I really deserve this? Like, this is such an incredible experience. And just from both of the stories you've told, it seems like that's exactly what it is.
Yeah, mate, absolutely. You know, like this wildlife that we get to go and have a look at, it's so, so much smarter than we give it credit for. And a lot of the vast majority of the interactions, and I guess unless you're looking at a seahorse, which we have a lot of where we live on the Mornington Peninsula, you know, these beautiful cetaceans, marine mammals, the whale sharks, the mantas, turtles and sharks, and they choose how the interaction is going to go down. And
hey, don't discredit seahorses.
Okay. Yeah, and seahorses as well. Yeah. So these beautiful animals like choose how the interaction is going to go, and to have orca come and see Sashi, or, you know, the dolphins or humpbacks that we've been lucky enough to swim with, or, you know, this school of hammerheads come, and they weren't necessarily hanging out. I'm sure they had better things to do, but just to give us that glimpse into their life was so special. Well, you're right, such a gift.
Okay. Well, look, we spoke about the challenges when it comes to sunbutter, but in terms of challenges in the ocean, what do you guys sort of see as your biggest challenges being on the ocean from day to day?
I guess one of the standout things, it gets so much coverage in the press, you know, we get to go to some of these really, really remote specks of sands in the tropics, especially the Pacific. You know, it's just so ridiculously big. Like, you'll know, mate, from sailing across it. You know, you end up on these tiny atolls that goodness knows when the last time a human foot stepped on it. And you get to some of the beaches and you just find them absolutely covered in plastics. Cosmolito is a great example. You know, we had this beautiful afternoon, beautiful snorkel, and, you know, we sort of sat on the beach wrapping up operations the next day, and Sashi picked up, how many flip-flops you end up with? 99 flip-flops, you know, easily that number of toothbrushes and plastic bottles and stuff. And, you know, you just had such an incredible experience in the ocean and such an incredible experience on land, you know, beautiful endemic birds and these huge colonies of boobies and frigate birds and stuff like that that roost on the islands. And then you sort of look deeper into the beaches, you see these turtle tracks, and then, yeah, you pick up 99 flip-flops. Yeah, it brings you back down to reality that there might not be footprints, but definitely humans' impact is being well felt on these spaces.
Yeah, it's incredible how far something like a flip-flop will travel too. Like, I don't know if you looked at where the flip-flops were from, but I don't think that many were from local.
No, not at all. They're amazing sailors, the old flip-flops. Yeah,
absolutely. The ocean currents just do such an incredible job of moving species and nutrients around, but obviously these days they're doing such a good job of moving our plastics around and our trash that finds its way in.
Yeah, definitely. Have you guys come across these what are they called again? Floating mats of plastic, like the one that's apparently the size of Texas in the North Pacific? Have you seen anything like that before when you've been on the cruises?
No, look, when you're out on the bow, occasionally you see something big like a plastic chair or, you know, bottles are quite common from time to time. But really from, you know, 20 meters up on the bow, you're not seeing it. It's so broken down, a lot of it. And, we have never sailed through a patch where it's been really thick, except for me coming into India, I saw a lot more plastic than I'd ever seen on the surface of the ocean. But yeah, it's when you're starting to, you know, you do these trawls behind your yacht and you can see the microplastic. I mean, that's just the stuff also that's floating. There's so much of it that's sinking as well. So we're just scratching the tip of the iceberg and quantifying how much of it's really in the oceans now.
Who knows? You know, I haven't done enough research to know how much plastic is actually, you know, surface plastic and what's sort of floating down and becoming an issue later on. But now the whole debacle about finding microplastics inside fish flesh, and that's sort of something that I've seen in the last, I don't know, year or so.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's so scary, isn't it? It's so scary in the sense it's happening and that we've let it happen, and to see it sort of entering the food chain visibly now, we know that it's in fish that we are going to be ingesting.
Also, corals are actively selecting plastics and not spitting them out like they spit out sand particles. So we know that corals are ingesting that into their tissues as well. And it's coming through us. I mean, one thing that we learnt of, being in the sunscreen industry is that a lot of companies use sun spheres, and they're actually these microscopic, tiny pieces of plastic, smaller than the microbeads they use as exfoliants in a lot of cosmetics. And they're designed to boost the SPF of your product without having to add as many chemicals. So they're very cheap, and then you have to add less chemicals and it boosts it up to the same SPF. So obviously anyone wanting to save money will put them in there, but they're so small they get absorbed right through into our cellular level and can pass through us so easily, which is why we ended up getting zero plastic certification from the Plastic Soup organization to show that we weren't using sun spheres. But it's not common knowledge. Pharmaceutical companies are using this. And when we're putting this tiny, minute level, it's like chemical pollution, not a visible problem until we have a serious problem, because we can't pick it up with our human senses. They're pretty crazy and they shouldn't be allowed. But I guess science needs to catch up on that one, and our governments need to take more action on this sort of stuff.
Very, very interesting. So you mentioned before that corals are absorbing plastic. I guess that's a good point to switch over to. And there's been a lot of publicity about the effect of, say, everyday sunscreen on corals. Do you want to dive a little bit into that and explain why that is?
Looking, there's been a lot more research recently. You know, you go to a popular beach, and Hawaii was really at the spearfront of this. You can go to a popular beach, you see a slick of sort of sunscreen washing off people onto the surface of the water. And so they got to thinking, well, what on earth are all these chemicals in sunscreen doing to the health of our ocean? Because some of the sunscreen chemicals haven't even been tested for the impact on human health, which I think is mad that we're, you know, approved to rub this on our bodies without it being fully tested to find out what it'll do to us. And then they got looking into it, and, you know, a lot of it has been done in laboratory conditions, but the vast majority, nearly all of them, have shown the harmful effects of common sunscreen chemicals onto corals themselves. And also then looking onto, you know, a lot of the research happens in the coral reefs, because it's warmer and it's sexier. So you're going to have more funding thrown for research there. But more temperate seas, there's been studies going on in Port Phillip Bay down near Melbourne as well, Mediterranean, to see the impacts of sunscreen chemicals on, you know, seagrass meadows or kelp beds and things like that. Similar results are coming in, and it's all looking pretty damning for chemical sunscreens. Certainly some of the ingredients. I don't want to say all of them, because the research isn't there to support that, but certainly there's the sort of nasty three or so that the research is pretty damning about the impact it has on coral reef.
Well, let's just talk about the specific chemicals that we are talking about, if you've got the names.
Yeah, so we're looking at oxybenzone, oxynoctate, and homosalate as pretty much the three worst offenders.
Obviously, if you can't have something in there, you've got to replace it with something. What would be the ingredients that you would replace those with?
So I guess as far as current research goes now, the safest sunscreen active ingredient, so that's the one that's either absorbing, if it's a chemical sunscreen, it absorbs the UV rays, and it's a mineral sunscreen, it just blocks them. The safest to date is non-nanoparticle zinc oxide. And so that's the active ingredient we use in sun butter. You know, naturally, pharmaceutical companies aren't particularly happy about bad news on some of their products. So they are doing a lot more research now into impacts of zinc oxide and titanium dioxide. It's another quite good mineral sunscreen base. So we're just starting to see research come out on those, but all is suggesting that non-nanoparticle zinc oxide is the safest for use, followed by non-nanoparticle titanium dioxide.
I'll just add that there is the HEL list, which has been created by the Hereticus Environmental Laboratory. That's where you get HEL from. They're really the only independent crew that are compiling research on these different chemicals. And the HEL list has just gotten so big. It used to be oxybenzone, and then octinoxate, and then 4-methylbenzolidine camphor. That's a mouthful. It just gets bigger and bigger. They're probably the best reference when you're doing this sort of research as to what's safe and what's not safe. Like Tom said, for the moment, any non-nanoparticle mineral UV blocker, which is zinc oxide or titanium dioxide, are definitely the best for humans because they're not absorbed into our skin. They act like a mirror and reflect the sun's rays. Many people don't realize that the chemicals in chemical sunscreen are designed to be absorbed into our skin and then absorb the sun's rays, which means that our body has to eliminate all these toxins, and you're lathering your body up with this every 2 hours. And no wonder you're getting breakouts and stingy eyes and itchies and all that kind of stuff, those sorts of reactions, because your body's trying to get rid of them. And then for the oceans, there is now research coming out that zinc oxide and titanium dioxide have effects, in different effects in laboratory conditions. We don't have any other UV blockers known to science at the moment, which is something that, you know, if we can get there and be funding research into plant-based UV blockers, that's really the direction that we need to go. And also reducing the amount of sunscreen that we use. So not being irresponsible about it. It's like a last minute, it's not a last minute, but a last resort, you know, cover up first, seek shade, and then wear sunscreen when you have to.
Do you think that that is the sort of future that you guys want to work towards, a bit more of the research to find out what is the best option for sunscreen?
Absolutely. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Nature has clearly been doing something right, because there's plenty of things that cope in the sun. So it'd be really interesting to look at some of their adaptations and what various species of coral or plants that are in the tropics are doing to cope with it. So we'd definitely love to sort of explore that. And, you know, any way we can lessen our impact on the planet is a good way to go, isn't it?
Yeah. For sure. And you guys are definitely setting a fantastic example on giving or providing a product to consumers that is, one, much better for the environment, and two, better for the consumer at the end of the day. We are so used to, especially in Australia, growing up, and we've got Banana Boat and the Cancer Council, you know, sunscreens that come in these 1 litre sort of squirty tubs, and that's just what we sort of grew up on and conditioned to use. So when we find out the news that, you know, these products, they're not necessarily good for you, or they're not necessarily good for the environment, it just makes sense to switch over to something that is. So you guys providing that for the consumers, I think, is a wonderful thing, and it'd be great if more people could do the same.
Yeah, thanks mate. Josh. Thanks, yeah.
Yeah, we're really finding that being a small business is just like being a member of a fabulous community, especially when you're doing a running a for-purpose business and trying to provide solutions. It's like a beautiful thing to do. And a friend of mine said recently, you know, if we wanted to change the world, more people should run small businesses. And then it takes the power from the big corporations, less people are working for someone else, and they start working for themselves, and it brings everything back to your local community. If you've got a dream and you want to supply, you know, a product or a service or something, one of the best things we can do for the planet is work for ourselves.
You've just answered my next question straight off the bat. Oh, nice. I like the way that played out. I don't have to ask it anymore, but I'm going to.
We're getting telepathetic.
Oh, that's it. The connection through the microphone is strong. My next question was going to be, what sort of advice would you give to people that are up and coming that want to make a difference? You've definitely given an answer, but what sort of more information could you push on to people?
I think perseverance is so key, especially if you've got something that's like a slightly different idea, like wanting to package sunscreen plastic-free that had never been done. You know, we started off with 24 or 20 pharmaceutical companies that could do what we wanted, and we got down to 2 because everyone just laughed or said no or didn't reply. So, you know, if you've got an idea and you really believe in it, especially if it's going to benefit the planet, then persevere, because eventually you'll find someone who wants to. And, you know, it might be an unlikely ally. It might not be the person you exactly need, but you might find someone else who can help you get an in to where you're going. So perseverance is so key, and belief. And, you know, we were so, so fortunate to have such a supportive group of friends and a community around us. We started off hand making, and we sort of said, look, we want to do this. And we ran a Kickstarter to help us get off the ground with Australia's first plastic packaging free sunscreen. And people just got so excited about it. It was so much fun to do, because everyone's getting right behind it and sort of vested interest in it. So that's really, really cool. And just keep going and eventually you'll find that key to open the door to help you get on with it.
That's a pretty cool thing to talk about. So you guys had a Kickstarter campaign. You obviously got to the point where it was like, okay, we want to take the next step. Do you want to tell us how that whole process works?
Yeah, it was heaps of fun, hey? We had the product lined up and we had the containers lined up and we sort of looked at them like, you know what, we're ready to go here. But as with everything, you know, cash is king. Books were looking a little bit tight and short. So we sort of thought, hey, let's turn to the Kickstarter community. And we actually went to a talk by Simon Griffiths, one of the founders of Who Gives a Crap, the toilet paper company, who turns out to live down the road from us, so we see him in the surf regularly now. And yeah, we're sort of talking to him about it, and he was like, look, it's a great way for you to engage your community and have them sort of like be champions for you. And I mean, we're asking for money, but you're not just sort of like, hey, can everyone lend me some money? We had a product and we knew exactly what we needed money-wise to achieve it. And so people sort of didn't view it as, oh, I'll just give them 10 bucks or whatever. They're like, oh, I'm going to join them on this journey, and so excited to see it come to fruition. So yeah, we launched Kickstarter. We were looking for about $20,000 and we ended up about 25 or so. And yeah, just it was so fun running it. And daily, people, friends, people we don't know, were just sort of getting in touch. We're like, oh my gosh, you know, you've got 50% of your target. Oh, look, you're at 60%. Oh, this is so exciting. And I think it really helped connect us with our Sunbud community and bring more people towards it as well. So that was pretty fun.
When you had this product and you go and put it out there and then you get all this positive feedback, must be a great experience.
Absolutely, yeah. It's so nerve-wracking when you think, oh, we're going to put ourselves out there. Maybe no one's going to donate. Oh, this is a bit scary. And then, yeah, to receive that feedback that people want this product and they're so stoked that you went there and you did it and you put in the time. Yeah, it was just a magical thing to do. It's so beautiful to connect with people on that level. Yeah, start to get some faces behind the support as well, like really get to know your audience.
Yeah, definitely. It's great. And the audience for you guys, I mean, your target market is, I guess, huge, but at the same time, quite limiting because a lot of people are stuck in their ways and they won't switch to a different sunscreen. But at the end of the day, I think more people are progressing towards using more conscious products, and you guys have just come up with something that is exactly what people want that are looking for that product. So yeah, I mean, I hope you guys just nail it and everyone's wearing sun butter in the future and you're on TV and it's no more banana boat, sun butter.
Yeah, it's really fun actually. We've got like a couple of graphics on our car and we're just driving down the beach street the other day, and this poor lady in the car next to us had her window down and she was smiling, giving thumbs up and pointing at our logo and then staring at the logo on the door and staring at us and, you know, sort of just to go, is this you? Are you guys sun butter? I love sun butter. And, you know, we're both on the verge of crashing. Thankfully, the traffic was pretty light. It was so much fun.
So funny.
Just so much happiness to be like, oh my gosh, it's a sun butter car.
Yeah, or pulling up in the surf car parks and having guys come up to you and be like, oh, do you make sun butter? And then they pull a tin out of the tray of their ute and they're like, oh yeah, I use sun butter.
Yeah, that's awesome, guys. You're going to be signing surfboards and T-shirts in no time.
No.
When that happens, I'm going to send that photo straight to you.
Yep, I can't wait. That's awesome. So, guys, thank you so much for coming on the show. I've had a great time. I really appreciate you sharing your knowledge and wisdom when it comes to reef-safe sunscreen, but also sharing your wonderful experiences of the ocean. I know you guys are super passionate about it, and every time I look at you guys, I just think you're a shining example of how to really connect with the ocean, respect it, and enjoy it. So thank you so much for coming on the show.
Oh, mate, thank you so much for having us. It's been a blast. It's been heaps of fun.
Such a pleasure, and so nice to have the opportunity to share some ocean love stories.
Yeah, definitely. So if people want to reach out to you and find your products, where can they go?
Yeah, so Instagram is sunbuttersuncare. That's probably our most popular platform. Or they can just go to sunbutter.com.au and get shopping, basically. Yeah, just get it straight in their car and go to checkout and protect themselves and the ocean is probably the best thing they can do.
Don't even think about it. Don't even put it in the car. Just press the buy now button.
Absolutely. But, you know, they can find our contact details through Instagram or on the website. If they want to shoot us an email or shoot us a DM or anything like that, we'd love to have a chat to people so they can get in touch that way.
Fantastic. Well, thanks again, guys, for coming on, and I wish you all the best in the future.
Yeah, thanks, mate. And congrats on Epic Podcast as well. It's been so fun listening to your guests, and I think such a privilege to be one of them now, mate. So
absolutely.
Good job.
Very humbled to be here. Thank you, Josh.
So, my salty friends, that's it for another episode. If you've liked what you've heard, then I'd love for you to share with your friends and family or anyone who you think might enjoy the show. So, until next time, go get salty, pick up that piece of plastic, share the ocean love, and I'll catch you next time on the Oceans Podcast.